Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Welcome to JewelCast. This is Nick. I'm your host today with Andrew Leafman or Lifland.
Hello.
Or that's him. He said hello.
Yeah. I go by Leafman these days.
Yeah, he changed his name. He's legally now Andrew Leafman.
Yeah. By the way, great job on the theme music. I know you were really stressed out when they asked you to compose the music for JewelCast, but
It was a rough couple of days a couple of summers ago, but I grinded through the night, put it together, put all my music composing skills into one song, and that's the only song I'll ever produce is the theme music to the JewelCast.
Well, it was good. I think it's pretty pop and beat, so I'm very happy with it.
Say that again.
So,
what was that?
I think the
you got to back up. What'd you say?
I said it was a pretty poppin' beat, man.
It was a pretty poppin' beat. We're very white, and we're talking about hockey today.
Yes, we are, both of us. So I think the key for this podcast for us is to avoid dead air, because we have to talk for an hour.
Yeah, dead air, definitely bad. I hate when air dies. It's no good.
So I think the key to avoiding dead air is going to be whenever there is dead air, we just need to say the key, we need to avoid dead air. And in so doing, we can actually avoid dead air.
So the key is to avoid dead air.
Yeah. No, yeah, that was good. That's kind of the stuff we need to be doing.
Okay.
What do you want to actually talk about, by the way?
I think we should, since this is a Kings podcast, we can talk about the Kings. And also, this is a Kings hockey podcast, so we can talk about hockey. I was thinking Kings hockey on the podcast. Does that sound good?
That sounds good to me.
I was also thinking, like, in the middle of the episode, we could have just 10 minutes of dead air. Or do you think we should avoid dead air?
You know, actually, I think the 10 minutes could be a welcome break from us and for us. So we'll definitely do that.
So 10-minute intermission, unless we forget. Also, Marissa is telling us that less Kings, less hockey on the Kings hockey podcast. So we'll have to take that into consideration as well.
Right. Have you noticed that, like, anytime I tweet that we're going to do a podcast and I ask for questions and comments and so forth, it's 100% trolls.
It's not even just trolls. It's pretty much just Conrad and Marissa. They're pretty much the only people that give us suggestions.
Right, and they are trolls.
They're trolls. They're friendly trolls, though. And they mean well. I think probably telling us to talk less about hockey and Kings, like telling the world that in general, is probably a good thing. So I think they mean well.
I agree that the world could benefit from less hockey talk and less Kings talk. I think there's too much in both.
On that note, let's start talking about Kings hockey.
Right. So the Kings, they lost.
They did lose.
Like,
it was,
they're dead.
They're dead. Like we want no dead air, but the Kings decided to die instead.
Yeah, can we have, like, 5 seconds of dead air to commemorate the Kings here?
All right, starting now. Moment of silence for the Kings. Rest in peace, Kings. You died as
Rip
you lived.
Kings.
Rip Kings. I don't really know how the Kings live, but they did die.
So I guess the question would be, Do you subscribe to the notion that this Kings team was in some way fatally flawed in such a manner that made it fundamentally different from the Kings teams of the past who did have playoff success?
I'm not sure they were fundamentally flawed. I do think there were obvious flaws with the team. The Scuderi trade was a big one, the Shen trade. I mean, they made bad moves. They made themselves considerably worse this year, which seems like a way to challenge the team that was not at all necessary. They didn't have to make any moves. Like, I think early in the season, there was a lot of talk about how the Kings needed to shore up the defense because they didn't like the mix with Erhoff on defense. And I think I wrote an article like, the Kings really don't need to do anything on defense. They were allowing, like, no scoring chances. I think it was, like, the third or fourth fewest in the league. They weren't allowing any shots. They weren't allowing anything. They didn't need to make any changes. Like, they were doing
right.
Fine. Even if Erhoff kind of performed under expectations, which he did, I expected more out of Erhoff, and I think a lot of stats-minded people probably did. And then, of course, if you're relying on eyeballs, and Erhoff was probably no good at all. I don't think they ever needed to make a change, and they instead made a bunch of very poor changes. Instead of probably the area where Erhoff struggled the most was actually moving the puck, which is what you wouldn't expect out of Erhoff. But I believe Jason Lewis tweeted way back when the trade happened that his success rate in clearing the zone with control was the second worst on the Kings, or maybe the worst on the Kings at the time for a defenseman. So the problem with Erhoff wasn't that he was bad defensively, it was that he couldn't move the puck. I mean, he might have been bad defensively. That's besides the point. But the guys they replaced him with were also bad defensively. So instead
right.
of improving on Erhoff, they took the one tangible skill he had was skill in the offensive zone and on the power play, which he was actually pretty effective on the power play this year in limited time. And they got rid of that and instead added basically nothing in Luke Shen and Rob Scuderi. They made the team worse, actually, by icing both of them at the same time. Probably if you just make one of those trades just straight up, if you have maybe Shen out of the lineup Shen into the lineup for Erhoff, it's probably not the end of the world. But both players really did put probably a significant clamp on the team's ability to produce, more than I expected. And so fatally flawed, I don't know, but they made themselves flawed in a way that it would have been tough to overcome, I think. I think early in the season I expected them to have a deep playoff run, and by the end of the season I did not, which I'm not really sure why. It was just general feeling. I didn't feel very good about their chances.
Okay, yeah. I think that's a pretty reasonable take. I would say a few things in response to that. First, I'd say that even with Shannon Scuderi polluting the blue line, the Kings were still overall a good team, even with them. And the Kings wouldn't be as good as they could have been had they acquired better players or had they acquired no players. But the Kings were still good, even with those players, because the Kings' core is so good. So I'd say that. And, you know, I'd throw out maybe a comparison, good comparison here would be San Jose, right? Who actually had a worse deadline than the Kings. San Jose traded 2 second-round picks for Roman Pollock and Nick Spaulding, which wasn't really the greatest move. But, you know, they're still cruising along because their core players are incredible, and it isn't really that important that Roman Pollock and Nick Spaulding suck. So I think, you know, that could have been a possibility for the Kings. I don't think the plan when they acquired Scuderi was to put him on the first pairing with Doughty and to play him as much as they did. And once he started doing that, he did start significantly hurting the team. That's true. And actually, Shang wrote a great piece on Jules from the Crown about how the Sharks disproportionately targeted Scuderi by dumping the puck into his side a lot more than they did Doughty's side. Which, I mean, yeah, why wouldn't you? That makes sense.
That is definitely true. And I will say that regardless of the trades, the Kings played a lot better down the stretch than they did in the five games in the playoffs. They didn't play very well in those games, I don't think, anyway. They were pretty outclassed. I was surprised by that more than anything. I was surprised they didn't play as well as they could have, because I think I said that they would win in seven, but I didn't expect them to. I actually figured
right.
that they would lose that series. I just can't pick against the Kings on the Kings podcast as a Kings fan. I was surprised that series is only 5 games. And I was surprised the Kings looked so far out of their depth. They didn't look like they belonged in that series. They looked, frankly, like one of the worst teams in the playoffs. I think probably Detroit looked worse, and that was about it.
I agree. It was a rough 5 games.
It was a rough 5 games. That was, and I think they kept the Corsi pretty close in the end, but that was because they were trailing, which is something we've talked about probably on all of our podcasts since the season ended. They kept the Corsi close, and they kept scoring chances close, and they probably kept expected goals closer than it looked in the series because they were always trailing and always coming from behind, so they were always playing a score-affected game. And the Sharks do seem to shell pretty hard from what we've seen going forward here in the Predator series, so it's... The Kings didn't play very well, and that was unexpected. And I don't think it had anything to do with it. It had a little bit to do with Shannon Scuderi and Le Cavalier, but not a lot to do with it. They just didn't play very well, and it was everybody. The Kings' top players got outplayed by the other team's top players. And that's just sometimes that happens. It hasn't happened to this team probably in the playoffs since 2010, because I think you can throw 2011 out since they didn't have Kopitar. But 2010 probably was the last time this team actually got outplayed in the playoff series that badly.
Yeah, in 2011, the Kings didn't have any top players.
This is true. They didn't have Justin. They had like half of Justin Williams. That was about it.
Yeah, and Drew Doughty had a good series.
He did have a good series. Yes. They did have Kevin Westgarth. So don't forget about him.
Drew Doughty did not have a great series against the Sharks this time around.
He was pretty bad.
Yeah, but I would suggest that, you know, the Kings overall were pretty good in their last 25 games of the regular season. They were basically right in line with what they'd done all season long, even with, you know, the new acquisitions around. And, you know, they didn't do well in the Sharks. They did okay by Corsi, a little bit worse by scoring chances and by Corsi. And I think the scoring chance numbers would more accurately reflect what was going on. But it's just 5 games, you know, and it's 5 games against a great team. And, you know, it's just, you can't really draw too much from it. So I wouldn't try too hard to search for any kind of deep meaning from it. For example, I wouldn't really care that, you know, Toffoli, I think he had one assist and not great possession numbers in those 5 games. But, you know, he had a great 82-game season, and that matters a lot more to me.
I agree with that. I think Quick was pretty bad in the playoff series, and that was probably ultimately the biggest difference, that Martin Jones was pretty good and Quick was terrible. Maybe the worst he's ever been in a 5-game series.
Yeah, what gave that away? How'd you come to that conclusion?
It was the massive amount of goals against from places where goals shouldn't be scored.
That was part of it. Especially when, you know, there are a massive amount of goals against, like, from really far away. It was
rough. It was rough watching Jonathan Quick. But we've harped on that. We've talked about the Kings playoff run. I think we can lay this Kings team to rest. It's going to be a pretty different team, I think, in about 2 months. So we'll see how it shakes out. I don't think they're going to be bad next season. I think they're still a very good team. And it'd be pretty hard to screw up this being a very good team next year. You'd have to actively work at it, I think. So rough 5 games. Not the end of the world. Hockey's still pretty fun. I kind of enjoy – I'm enjoying these playoffs. Are you enjoying the playoffs?
Yeah, I am. I particularly enjoyed the Blues-Blackhawks series. I watched pretty much all of that. And the Capitals-Flyers series was also quite fun. It's been a good time.
It has been. I didn't enjoy the Capitals-Flyers series just because it was 3-0 right away, and the Flyers didn't look very good at the start. So, I mean, they did force Game 6, but I didn't enjoy that series as much as I expected to. I thought that would be a much, much more competitive series than it turned out to be. It got closer, but again, I didn't really care that the Kings were, or that the Flyers were sort of competitive late in that series, because that series was over at 3-0. I did enjoy Blues Blackhawks. Very, very enjoyable to watch Chicago bow out of the playoffs. Probably the most joy I've gotten out of a playoff series besides the Kings in a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great. I thought the Blues were just going to squish the Blackhawks, and I was kind of disappointed that they didn't do that. It was a pretty evenly played bout.
Yeah, Chicago definitely stepped up their play in the playoffs, I think. Or maybe the Blues stepped down. I mean, the Blues have been kind of shaky here against Dallas, too. At least I expected the Blues to do a little better. I think we're probably in the same boat there. I'm just a little surprised the Blues aren't dominating territory as well as they did in the regular season.
Yeah, I heard Nashville Anaheim was fairly decent to watch, but since I'm on the East Coast and am in the middle of college finals, I did not. I basically watched none of that one.
I didn't think that was. I didn't think that was a great series, personally. I mean, it's again enjoyable, like from a narrative standpoint. Like I enjoyed watching Anaheim lose a fourth consecutive game seven on home ice after being up 3-2 in a series, which just seems like improbable. Like that has to be on the very low end. It has to be on the very low end of possibilities in a playoff series, or at least in a 4-year stretch of playoff runs. Like that just doesn't happen. Like it shouldn't happen anyway. Cause I think they were better probably than all four teams they lost to, except for the Kings. I think the Kings were better than Anaheim in that series, but they probably should have had a better fate in at least one of those series. And now Bruce Boudreau is a free agent. I hope he ends up with the Kings somehow.
Yeah, not too likely, but that would be nice.
He does really like the Kings. I can't say this enough. He's a big Kings fan.
Oh, yeah. Who wouldn't be, though? We're great.
I think
that's
a lot of people are really... I wouldn't ask general hockey fans why they wouldn't be a Kings fan. I think there are many reasons to not be a Kings fan. Namely, that they've beaten pretty much everybody.
That's true,
also,
yeah.
They're also kind of gross. Like I get it.
Yeah, no, yeah.
There's a lot of reasons.
Thing. Yeah.
There's reasons, but Bruce Boudreau ignores those reasons and just dives headfirst into being a Kings fan, which is pretty fun from the coach of the Anaheim Ducks for the past five seasons.
Yeah.
So which series do you have your eye on? Which is like caught your eye here in the second round?
Stars, please, for sure. I always enjoy watching the Stars play hockey. They play. Certainly, I think they have a reputation for playing wild hockey, and they, not Minnesota wild hockey. That's horrible hockey.
Yeah, that's
terrible. I mean, like crazy hockey, and they absolutely deserve it. It's a lot of chances back and forth, horrible goaltending, and that's a good time. So I like that one.
That horrible goaltending seemed to kind of catch Brian Elliott last night because I really don't know what he was doing on that third goal. That was a mystery. He just kind of flopped face first on his stomach for no real reason. It was pretty bizarre.
Yeah, it was maybe, kind of like a seal-like kind of maneuver. No, never that great, yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen actually, like Jonathan Quick sprawls out a lot. I've never seen him do that move. So it's really not good if I haven't seen Jonathan Quick do a kind of a messed up, terrible move in that, because he does most of them.
By the way, is it just me or is Pekka flopping around like crazy? He did it. In both Sharks games, he was all over the place. I mean, his results haven't been too bad. If you subtract the empty netters, he hasn't let in that many goals against. But, like, he seems so wild to me.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of faith in the Predators in this series, and part of that is Pekka Rinne. He hasn't had a good season. He's had a good, I think, four games now, going back to game six of the Ducks series, where he has not been the reason they lost, but yeah, I do agree that he doesn't inspire a lot of confidence back in that right now.
Yeah, I think I like the Sharks to finish the Predators off pretty handily there. The Sharks are great.
The Sharks are very good. Like that's another thing. Like it's easy to say the Kings lost in five games in the playoffs, but they lost to a really good team. It's not like they lost to the Minnesota Wild or the Detroit Red Wings or somebody like that. Like they lost to a good team, and that's going to happen sometimes. Like they've lost to Chicago before. They lost to Vancouver in 2010, who was a good team. They lost to San Jose in 2011, who was a good team. So they lose to good teams at least. At least they aren't getting blown out of series they should win, or should win probably at least 6 times out of 10, which this was probably a pretty even split to begin with. Like it was probably five out of 10 times they should have won that series at best.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Kings really have had pretty bad luck in terms of whom they draw as playoff opponents. I think the last time the Kings, because bad teams do fairly frequently sneak into the NHL postseason, so it is quite possible to draw some really lopsided matchups. But I think the only time that's happened to the Kings in recent memory was that Western Conference final against the Coyotes.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense at all, because it was the Western Conference final when you should be facing a good team, but the Coyotes managed to knock off, I think, the Red Wings and Chicago.
No, it was the Blackhawks and then the Predators.
That's correct.
Yeah, because I remember once the Kings were up 2-0 on the Blues, and it was like the Kings were just destroying the Blues in that series, in that second round series. I remember seeing that the other half of the bracket was Phoenix and Nashville, and I'm like, oh my God, the Kings are definitely going to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, that was definitely a point like I had. I think after probably game two, but definitely after game three, when it was like, oh my God. And it wasn't just that they were going to the finals. It was like, oh my God, they're probably going to win the cup. Like they've got to be the favorite at this point.
Yeah. We should just talk about the 2012 Kings.
There was like at least a year and a half after that, I could recall every goal that the Kings scored in that playoff run, because it was so much fun to me. Like as a fan that has never experienced any kind of sports joy in my life. Like I could remember everything. Like, I think it was Willie Mitchell had the first goal for the Kings. It was a power play goal. I think it was their only power play goal in the first three rounds of the playoffs or something ridiculous like that. It was Willie Mitchell. And I felt so bad early in that series against Vancouver, because I think Alex Burrow scored the opening goal in that series. And it was like, oh my God, we're going to get blown out by Vancouver and nobody's going to take it seriously. And we've traded away a first round pick for Jeff Carter and everybody's going to think it's a terrible idea. And then it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I will say,
by the way, to the people who claim that this year's Kings team, you know, wasn't cup material because it had some holes, especially on defense, that 2012 team's second line center was Mike Richards. And he was not good back then.
He did have a good playoff run. At least he produced some points. Like, he just stopped doing everything by the end of his Kings career, but he did at least produce some points in that playoff run. I think he had 16. He definitely had a bunch in the Vancouver series. He was up and down after that.
Well. He had that dramatic pass off Jeff Carter's skate onto Dustin Penner's stick, which he totally meant to do to win game one against Vancouver.
Carter had the pass off the skate.
Right. No. Yeah. But Richards passed it off of Carter's skate onto Penner.
Yes, and that was the big second line with Penner, Carter, and Richards, and 2/3 of that line did like nothing else as Kings besides that playoff run, which is amazing.
Yes.
But then there's Jeff Carter, who's pretty much amazing, and he had a great playoff run too.
Yeah. He was kind of the guy second line viable to the extent that it was viable.
Two game winners in the Stanley Cup final. We could talk about this all day. I could, anyway. I don't think we will. I don't think we will talk about it all day, but we could. 2012 was a lot of fun. I miss it.
Yeah, best Kings year, for sure.
It's got to be one of, like, the best sports seasons for a team in history. Like, it was a mediocre regular season, but they made the playoffs. And then there was never a doubt at any point in that playoff run that they were going to win every series. Like, maybe early in game one of each series, but then they were up 3-0 within, like, 5 days of every series. It was ridiculous. It was really
the opposite of 2014 in that respect.
2014 was horrifying at every step. Except maybe when the Kings were up 3-1 on Chicago and then the Stanley Cup final, which I don't even care about because they beat Chicago and they were going to win the Stanley Cup anyway.
Right, yeah, that was a done deal. No, but I would actually point to the 2012 team as, because I'm sure when Kings fans look back at this era of Kings hockey, they will distinguish sharply between the 2012 through 2014 teams who managed to win 10 playoff series in 3 years, and the last 2 years of Kings teams who have managed to win one playoff game in 2 years. But I don't actually think that the last 2 years of Kings teams are significantly different in talent or heart or anything than the prior 3 years. And my favorite example of this is that the 2012 Kings had 95 points in the regular season and snuck into the playoffs. And the 2015 Kings, last year's Kings, also had 95 points. And the difference was not what the Kings did, but what the Calgary Flames did.
Yeah, it was everybody else. Like, Vancouver and Calgary were both really bad teams that managed to sneak into the playoffs and then promptly flame out of the playoffs. No pun intended, but
right.
It was pretty discouraging to watch the Jets, the Canucks. The Jets were a decent team that just kind of caught a bad run there. But the Jets, the Canucks, the Flames, bowed out of the playoffs really quick because the Kings just kind of watched. And I think the Kings would have done a lot better in that playoff, especially against Anaheim and definitely against either Vancouver or Calgary. They would have won that series probably in 5 games.
But yeah, that would have been a really easy round, first round, the kind of first round the Kings have never had in recent history.
Never. But, I mean, probably never, at least not in my lifetime. They've always been a low seed in the playoffs, so they always end up with a tough matchup in the first round.
Yeah, and I was born after the 1993 Kings run, so...
Yeah, I was not a Kings fan at that time either. I was born, but I was not alive as a Kings fan. So.
Yeah. I was born in 2004, I think, yeah.
I thought it was 03.
Yeah, it was something like that.
13 years old, Andrew Leaf fan, on the Jewel cast. Okay, so we talked about the Kings, 2012, a lot of fun. How does the future of the Kings look?
Well, I'd say the Kings have been remarkably consistent, probably the most consistent NHL team in terms of quality, and also, not coincidentally, in terms of who's actually on the roster over the last 5 years or so. Like, the Kings have always been 56% Corsi team, maybe doesn't, you know, have a great shooting percentage. End result, really good team.
Very
and
true.
Even the penalty kill and the power play, which, you know, are more volatile than even strength results because they're smaller sample, even those have been fairly consistent, which is to say consistently mediocre, over the past few years. One new thing that's crept in the last couple of years is the Kings have started taking a ton of penalties, way more than they draw. So that's a bit of a concern. But for the most part, the Kings have remained sort of the same great team for a really long time, and I don't really see any reason to think that's going to change next year.
Yeah, it would take a lot of work to mess up this team because what powers this team is always going to be Andre Kopitar, Jake Muzzin, Drew Doughty. Those guys aren't going anywhere. I guess they could trade Jake Muzzin if they're really dumb. I guess they could do that. It's been floated that the Kings need to shed a contract and that Jake Muzzin could be up for it. But that was floated by a man that also just completely erased Braden McNabb from the face of planet Earth.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
Braden McNabb existed and been added a footnote to his
article. He didn't even forget he existed. He was like, the Kings are probably just not going to bring Braden McNabb back. And it's like, why would they do that?
I think my theory is he wrote this long article about what the Kings' plan is for next season on defense. He forgot about Braden McNabb, and then somebody reminded him about Braden McNabb when he decided to add in, oh, they'll probably cut Braden McNabb at the end.
He could have been like, you know what? I totally goofed it. I thought that the Kings would go with Kevin Gravel over Braden McNabb next season, which doesn't make any sense at all because Kevin Gravel, whether you like him or not, has not done anything at the NHL level. The Kings have Braden McNabb, who's been a pretty decent NHLer for 2 seasons. Maybe a little underwhelming
like
this year. I like Braden McNabb. I think he has as potential as, if not a second pairing defenseman, at least an effective third pairing defenseman with a little more offensive skill than Matt Green will ever have.
Yeah, I like him. I would be interested in giving him a little more play time, actually.
It's tough because the Kings have had, I think, a lot of offensive talent, and they want to get Drew Doughty and Jake Muzzin as much time as possible. So it's a little tough to get him out there. I get that. And I don't know if I'd put him on over Erhoff when they had him. I definitely wouldn't put him on over Erhoff, and I might not put
Martinez.
Him on over Martinez is going to draw the second pairing minutes. But I don't know if I'd put him on over McBain, who's on the team this year, or Erhoff, who's on the team this year. I don't know if I'd go with McNabb over them. But he isn't a terrible option either. He's at times shown a flash of offensive skill here and there. So I'm not opposed to that. But even if he doesn't, he's an effective player, and that's okay. He doesn't have to score points because he moves the puck in the right direction, generally speaking.
Yeah, I think McNabb got kind of stung by the shooting percentage gods this season, and he didn't put up a lot of points because of that. But I think in his Corsi results, he's been a really totally reasonable second-pairing defenseman, which is exactly what the Kings need. And he's also cheap. And plus, he's even like a Kings kind of player. I mean, he's slow, he's big, he hits people. Yeah, like I would be shocked if the Kings soured on him. That
yeah,
wouldn't
I
make any
I,
sense to me.
I would be stunned. The Kings I guess the comparison as far as defensemen that have come up would be Jake Muzzin, who had at least by the eye test, had a very shaky 2013 playoff.
Right.
Nobody had any faith in him at all. And I think Sutter even said this year, you know, Braden had been a reliable defender for us, and he looked a little overwhelmed in the playoff series against the Sharks. And he said he specifically pointed the playoffs. There's no way the Kings are not bringing Braden McNabb back next year. It's just not going to happen. The chance that happens is so slim on a team that has really a lack of defensive talent in the pipeline. Like, they have Forbort and they have Gravel, who have done nothing at the NHL level to warrant a guaranteed roster spot next year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one of them can start on as the sixth defenseman or the seventh defenseman next season. I would be a little surprised if that doesn't happen. They both could start on the roster next year, actually, if things shake out a certain way. But Braden McNabb is definitely coming back. The Kings don't have a lot of cap space. They have a good – I think they can evaluate their talent there and say McNabb has 2 years in the NHL, one which he was pretty good, and then one when he was maybe not quite as good and had a rough playoff. But he's going to get better going forward, or at least he's going to be what he is now, which is already pretty good. So the chance the Kings don't keep him, very small. It would be pretty stupid if you wrote an entire article and just left him off your 2016-17 team.
I can't harp on that enough.
That would be really embarrassing if you had a pretty large platform and tried to command a lot of authority and influence in a fandom and then just ignored Braden McNabb. If you did that, it would be ridiculous. Just don't do that.
Yeah, I don't think the Kings' blue line is – I think their work needs to be done, certainly, and it doesn't help that the prospects are terrible in this area. But I don't think it's a total crisis because Doughty and Muzzin are two anchors of really great pairings. And I think McNabb is a perfectly fine complement to Doughty. I have no issues with that. So I think the Kings really could probably use somebody to pair with Muzzin, but it doesn't have to be – you know, you don't need an exceptional player for that. They just need, you know, warm body, do fine. And
ideally, Matt Green will be healthy next year too, which would help.
Yeah, and then if Matt Green comes back, Green Martinez, I'm okay with that as the third pairing.
It would be good.
Fine.
Just don't bring back Shen and Scuderi or somebody like that.
Don't do that. Yeah.
Oh, just don't do that. That's who you should forget about on the 2017 team or the 2016 team. Just erase them from planet Earth and it would be okay. Like, just erase them from this timeline. Put them in somewhere else, some other timeline. Be good.
Yeah, I think the Kings do have the space to potentially sign a top four defenseman if they don't sign Lucic. But I think it might be smarter to re-sign Lucic and, you know, just, you know, look around the scrap heap and find this year's version of Christian Ehrhoff and hope it works out better. Or, you know, I mean, there are guys floating around there who you can pick up and who can do, you know, a serviceable job. It's possible. Like
Jamie McBain.
Yeah. Like, you know, the Kings sort of lost faith in him at the end of the year, but I think that was more the Kings' fault than McBain's. I think he was doing totally fine.
The Kings just liked a certain mix. I think they've always liked the puck mover and the infamous line, the puck stopper. They like those guys together. And I don't know why you'd ever want a puck stopper unless he's in net, but the Kings don't put a puck stopper in net. They put Jonathan Quick in net.
Right.
So I would think that McBain and Green would be a good third pairing, and you could go Muzzin Martinez and you could go Doughty McNabb up top and you'd have a good defense. And you'd still have a really good team next year without making really any changes at all. You'd probably need to add a little bit of defensive depth because Matt Green has had a pretty troubled injury history at this point, so might not be relied upon for next season. I definitely wouldn't count on him being healthy for next season. So he's missed two full seasons now in his last three.
Rather have the $2.5 million in cap space than Matt Green. Probably.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Wait, than Matt Green? I would rather have Matt Green because I don't trust him to spend that $2.5 million well.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just like, when Matt Green was healthy, even as he had no foot speed and limited puck skills, and he was nevertheless like actually fairly effective somehow. I'm not really sure how. But his possession results were always pretty decent. I'm a little skeptical that he can keep that up now that he's even older, presumably even slower, and has not played hockey in a long time.
That's
but
reasonable.
He's a defenseman, so
it's
not a huge
I think he's a good gamble to take since he's on, under contract and he's on the team next year. I would have insurance for him, definitely. I would have somebody behind him that could play. So maybe that's where McBain steps in, or probably that's where Kevin Gravel or Derek Forbort steps in. Just not Rob Scuderi. Just don't put Rob Scuderi on next year's team.
Yeah,
convince him to retire. Convince him to retire. Trade him, wave him, wave goodbye to him. Put him on a boat and float him out to sea. I don't really care.
Yeah, that last one might be good. You know, you can find a nice island home somewhere. Retire in peace, too.
Hopefully. You can only hope.
Yeah.
So, okay, we talked about the defense. I think the forwards, we've talked about Lucic in the past on the podcast. We talked a little bit about Dustin Brown. But Dustin Brown's definitely not going to be a king next year, as far as I can tell. Like, I know that he's under contract.
I think he's going to be a king next year.
I would be shocked. I'm going to say, at best, there's a 50% chance he's a king next year. I think it's worse than that.
I'm going to say, at worst, there's a 50% chance he's a king next year.
Why don't you think they're going to trade him?
I think they're going to try, and I think they're not going to be able to.
I think they'll find a deal. This is a riveting conversation. I think they'll do this. I don't think they'll do this.
I'd be shocked if someone else took him on. His point totals are just so low over the past few years. I think they're going to be stuck with him until an expansion draft or a buyout.
I think that there are teams that would value his leadership. The Kings might have to eat contract, or they might have to deal somebody like Adrian Kempe. If they have to deal somebody like Tanner Pearson, then I would say you probably just hang on to Brown and hope for the best expansion draft. But I think they'll find a way to do it.
Yeah, we'll see. Either way, the Kings are definitely giving up assets if they manage to move that.
And also,
like
since
a first-round pick or something like
Marissa immediately asked who'd be the next captain. It would be Andre Kopitar. There's no doubt about that. Andre Kopitar is the next captain of the Kings.
Yeah.
I 100% sure. No doubt. I think they've referred to I talked about this last week. They referred to him as a captain a couple of times this year, I think by accident. But Andre Kopitar is the next year captain of the Kings. It's weird what's happened to Dustin Brown. It feels really weird. Like, just kind of – he just faded. He's just going to fade right off the team. Like, he just faded from the top line, and then he faded from our hearts.
Yeah. I was wondering if they could trade for Willie Mitchell and put him on IR and make him captain and just kind of have him hang out.
I would love to have Willie Mitchell back in the Kings organization. Willie Mitchell is one of, like, the five guys in the NHL that seems like an actual good dude. Like, he just seems like a good guy. I like Willie Mitchell. I hope he does end up back with the Kings organization as a broadcaster or a scout or the president of business operations or the general manager or the president of the Kings or the owner of the team. I don't really care.
Yes, I also really, really hope he never plays hockey again, though.
I do, too, for his own good.
Yeah,
I don't really care that he's not very good at hockey anymore. He has had so many injury issues, and now, more importantly, he's had a lot of head issues, which he needs to not play anymore.
Protect
your beautiful brain, Willie.
In Florida. Yeah, I mean, it's his life, but...
Protect your beautiful brain, please.
Yeah, he's got a good head up there, so you gotta take care of it. I think Jeff Carter, who Marissa proposes for captain, would be a hilarious choice as captain. I would actually make Tyler Toffoli captain if I were running the Kings.
That's fair. He's the captain.
He would bring some sunshine and joy to the Kings locker room. Maybe a slightly less intense vibe.
I don't agree that he should be the captain, but I love Tyler Toffoli. He could be the captain of my heart. He could be the captain of my life. But I don't think he should be captain of the Kings. I think down the line, he could be. It's possible.
He brings some much-needed chill and smile to
that I do love that he brings to the team. I was actually talking about this with Chanel from Thanks Bud recently. This is not a very fun Kings team personality-wise. Like, ignoring the bad parts of this team, like, there's not a lot of fun on this team. Like, nobody has any personality at all. Even Dustin Brown, who I adore, is the most boring person in the NHL.
Right.
Except when he's trying to sext his wife live on Hockey Wives, which was pretty amazing. But other than that, pretty boring guy. Andrei Kopitar, I love. Very boring guy. I would watch everything he does forever, but that doesn't make him not boring.
Right.
Jeff Carter, fairly boring guy. Tweets about his dogs a lot. Has his wife tweet about their dogs. Loses dogs and injures dogs at random, apparently, now. Like, he's always tweeting about injured dogs. I don't really know why Carter has all these injured dogs. But boring guy. I don't care about Drew Doughty, the person, at all. Jake Muzzin's a very boring guy. Braden McNabb, aside from the fact that he is in love with Andy Andrioff, very boring guy. Andy Andrioff, extremely boring guy. Tyler Toffoli,
aside
Ray
from
Funches,
the fact that he's in love with Braden McNabb, however.
Very true. Their love is beautiful. Yeah. However, Tyler Toffoli is a ray of sunshine. He's beautiful.
Yes. He's funny and warm and interesting and really everything I want in a Kings captain. So hopefully that is the case one of these days. There are a few other Kings we should probably talk about. The one, Trevor Lewis, unrestricted free agent. I think he currently has a cap hit of $1.525 million. So what's going to happen there?
I think the Kings finally let him go.
Yes, and I think that would be a good move. He's really old.
He's like 50 years old. It's ridiculous. I think he just got
not a young player.
He got 10 years older since this podcast started.
Yeah, I know. I don't think the Kings should invest in a rapidly aging player like that.
I agree. It's not a good call. If they could find like a Benjamin Button situation, a rapidly de-aging player, that would be a little better. If like Trevor Lewis
right.
is 30, 32 going on
like
31,
to a baby
and then
on the ice or something, that would be problematic.
Yeah, that's at least a few years down the line though. And you're investing
that's
in a player
true.
That's going backwards through his prime, so you'll get his scoring prime coming up pretty soon. But I don't.
Yeah, you put
Trevor
a lot
Lewis,
of thought into this.
Okay,
yeah.
But Trevor Lewis' scoring prime is not any good. So even if he's Benjamin Button, let's just get rid of Trevor Lewis. It's
right.
a terrible idea. Benjamin Button or not, terrible idea.
I agree. And I appreciate what Trevor Lewis did for the Kings, and he's been a solid defensive player. But he really is one of the worst scorers of this NHL era. He really puts up the 5v5 scoring results of a goon. And I think the Kings can do better. Even if whoever they get isn't quite as good defensively, if they're just, moderately competent offensively, that will be a big step forward.
Nick Shore is already Trevor Lewis, except he can take faceoffs. Like, that's been probably Trevor Lewis's big take-back drawback as a center in the NHL, at least, is that he's never been any good at taking faceoffs. He's always been pretty poor. Nick Shore is already an above-average faceoff guy. He already is as good defensively as Trevor Lewis ever has been. And unsurprisingly, they're about equal offensively. Probably
yeah,
the results were a little worse for Shore, but
the results were terrible offensively for Shore this year, and they were so bad offensively that even though defensively he was amazing, he produced, in fact, I think the best Corsi numbers in the league, or certainly very close to it. But his offense was so bad and his scoring was so bad that I think he still was not actually a valuable player last year. But I think there is still hope that his offense will grow to, a semi-respectable level. And if it does do that, then the Kings will be set at third line center for a while. I like Nick Shore. He's a Trevor Lewis you can dream on.
I agree with that. And you could have Trevor Lewis there, and I could probably live with at least starting the year with Andrioff on the fourth line. So you could have, I guess, Clifford and Nolan are both under contract for a while still. So you have them along with Andrioff on the fourth line, which would be a pretty bad fourth line, but I could probably live with a pretty bad fourth line because nobody cares about the fourth line. Your
right,
fourth line
yeah.
is never going to kill your team. It just doesn't happen. Like, the Kings won a Stanley Cup with Jordan Nolan and Colin Fraser drawing regular minutes. So not a big deal. I mean, Colin Fraser even scored a goal in the Cup final. So go Andrioff, go.
Another unrestricted free agent, Christopher Stieg.
He will not be a King next year.
Yeah, I think the odds are pretty minimal. It didn't seem like Sutter liked him. I mean, not that Sutter likes anybody, but I think he clearly take a disliking to Chris Versteeg.
Yeah, that was very predictable.
Right, yeah. No, I don't know why when I wrote my Versteeg reaction, I was like, look, he's like scored all these points and been a decent possession player everywhere he's went. And I don't know why I didn't pause to think, oh wait, Sutter is gonna absolutely load this guy.
Yeah, Sutter doesn't care about goals.
Yeah, no, it's like
He doesn't care.
He's not strong on the puck. He's not a traditional Kings forward at all. It's kind of strange the Kings ever traded for him. I mean, I thought it was a good move. I think he's a good player, despite not having a lot of the traits the Kings typically value. But, yeah, it seemed like a weird fit from that perspective. And it was.
Yeah, that didn't go very well. Probably a waste of Zikov, but I don't think there was a good use for Zikov, so no, nothing really lost.
I think Zikov was probably an overrated prospect. His point totals were just really not indicative of somebody who was going to become an NHL top six forward. So
yeah,
I don't mind giving him up for Versteeg.
He's not the Russian that you're thinking of. All right. He's a big body. He throws some hits.
There could be a grinder role in him for the future.
No.
But not that valuable.
No.
I'm not super worried.
No. Speaking of not very valuable, let's talk about the Kings' prospects.
Oh, yeah. That was a perfect transition. Nicely done.
Thank you. The Kings' prospects are pretty bad. Like, they're really bad. There's no sugarcoating this. The Kings' prospects are really bad, and there's not hope of them getting better in the near future because, like we've talked about, their trade assets are probably Dustin Brown and Marian Gaborik, who will not get very much in a trade. Unless you really bite a lot of contract off Dustin Brown's remaining cap hit. But if you did that defeats the point of trading him. You'd actually get more out of keeping him and keeping him as a useful Corsi player on the third line that doesn't score very much anymore.
I'd also like to keep Gaborik around. I think Gaborik is still good when he's healthy.
I do too. I definitely, at least another year. I mean, they'll have a chance if they trade Brown to probably they'd be able to ditch him at the expansion draft, but definitely
that
another
contract
year.
Might need to be bought out eventually, but I think for now, Gaborik still has a nice contribution to make.
I agree. Yeah. I think he'll have a good bounce back season next year. I don't think they'll need to buy it out just because I'm so down on what the Kings will be 3 or 4 years from now. I'm extremely down on it. It's not bright to look at the future of this team just because they have nothing coming and they've poured all of their assets into making this team win right now, which is why they will almost definitely re-sign Lucic unless they can't get that contract wrapped up by July 1st. If he makes the free agency, I don't think there's any way Vancouver lets him go. And I think he'll probably want to go to Vancouver. But if the Kings can wrap him up now, I think they'll do everything they can to get that done because they really want to be competitive in the next 3-4 years. And it would take so much work for them to replenish their draft prospects and to replenish their prospect pool in general. It's probably their best course of action is actually to re-sign Lucic through his 27 through 31 years at least, and probably his 27 through 33 years. It's probably in their best interest to do that because probably by the end of that contract, the Kings will be bad and it won't matter what they're paying these top-end guys because there's not a whole lot of hope of improving the team anyway.
Right. Yeah, I think re-signing Lucic is a pretty reasonable win-now move, and I expect the Kings will probably get that done. I'm curious what the cap hit will be. Some people are suggesting now that it will land under $6 million.
I think
actually be a pretty good value if the Kings pulled it off. I'm expecting it to be higher, but we'll see.
Yeah, I am definitely expecting it to be higher. It'll be over six, and that's not terrible. Lucic has been a pretty valuable player. I haven't looked at what his comparables would be as far as the contract goes, but I think he'll be a decent player next year.
Yeah,
probably
for
the next few.
He's another one of those, you know, awful personalities, but he is good.
Yeah.
Play hockey.
I don't know what to do about the Kings' personality. It's pretty bad.
Make
I don't know
Tyler Toffoli captain is what you should do.
You've got to clone Tyler Toffoli and put like 18 of him on the team just to fix the dearth of personality on the rest of the team.
I know.
It's so bad.
Martin Jones and his howl, that was a huge mistake.
Don't bring up the Martin Jones trade.
Yeah, it was very sad.
So sad. I wonder if Colin Miller has a personality.
I'm not sure, but...
His name is Colin Miller, so it seems unlikely.
That's true. Perversely, I actually think the Lucic trade, strangely enough, looks better now than it did back when the Kings made it.
For some reason, we all thought he was going to be terrible, or at least you and I. I don't know if terrible is the right word, but we didn't expect very much out of him. And maybe it's just because I expected him, like I said last week, I expected him to throw like a tamper tantrum every other game. And he only threw like three or four this year. So not too bad.
Yeah, and like he was really good statistically.
He really
like,
was.
He had a great year. He maybe a little bit of shooting percentage luck, but he's always been a kind of a guy who has a high shooting percentage. So that might be kind of sustainable for him.
I think even if he dips a little bit, my expectations were for him to score 45 points a season, and that would have been okay. It wouldn't have been the worst.
He had like 50 or something.
He had 50-ish, 53, something like that. I don't really care. He had a good amount.
So
he beat my expectations by a little bit. He was good, though, and he's a very good, straightforward player. I think in that sense he's a very good replacement for Justin Williams because Williams was the same type of thing where they were very efficient north-south players. They didn't cut across the ice. They went straight to the net all the time, 24-7. They would go straight to the net from the neutral zone. They would not hold up at all. They would get the puck in deep. They would get it back, and they'd get the puck to the right areas. They do the little things that probably we undervalue as a whole. They do the little things very well. And it made the Kings a pretty good, or it helped the Kings continue to be a very good possession team. And it's why they didn't really drop off from Williams to Lucic because they play the same type of game. Williams does it better, but Lucic does it pretty well too.
Yeah. I think it still would have made much more sense to re-sign Williams than to sign Lucic.
For sure.
I think
no
that's
doubt.
A no brainer.
Yeah.
I really don't see how anyone could even argue otherwise. Williams
is
great with the Caps this year, by the way. But I think
also, Justin Williams has a personality.
Oh yeah, there is that. He
was a charming man. He was charming and handsome and not a baby on the ice. Did take some stick penalties that were unfortunate. He took some bad offensive zone penalties, and that's something he still does in Washington. I think he had three minor penalties the other night, which isn't ever great. But
yeah,
he was a very good player. And
two minor penalties. Yeah.
Yeah, you got two minors a game.
Yeah.
That's the worst. That's the worst you can do.
True.
I miss the Kings having personality. It feels like they used to. Maybe that's just remembering the past.
Yeah. Do you remember Grains on Twitter, her like Los Angeles Kings name generator?
Yes.
Yeah,
her name is Grania, by the way. Grania. I'm
Grania,
not joking.
Oh.
It's Grania.
Well, considering that she calls herself Whole Grain,
it's because everybody else calls her Grain.
I defaulted to that pronunciation.
Let's just get her name right. Her name's Grania.
Okay, my apologies to Grania. But her excellent, she's a great, you should definitely follow her.
Yes.
But her excellent Los Angeles Kings name generator, I feel like it really captures the personality or the lack of personality.
It really does. Let me see if I can draw it up real quick.
I think I got Dustin Brown as my Kings name, which is, I think, an ominous sign for my future. Oh, well.
I can't find it right now, unfortunately.
Yeah. Let's see. One more thing. So we have a few minutes left.
Seven minutes.
I think we were supposed to talk about awards.
Yeah, the Kings are probably going to win at least two awards this year. I think Kopi probably takes home both the Selke and Lady Bing. I think it's his year.
That'd be cool. I don't think he's had his best Selke year. And I'm not sure I would pick him as the top two-way forward. But, you know, I mean, I'm not one to get too worked up about these awards. He's certainly been a great two-way player for a really long time. So why not? Makes sense. And that's my hot
take. Wait. I got the Trevor Lewis name generator from our silent producer, Eric. And I can't retweet it because right now it has 4 retweets and 20 likes.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to ruin that.
I can't ruin that. Yeah. But you did you did get Dustin Brown, like you were.
Yes.
Andrew Leafman translates to Dustin Brown, and mine was Marlon Justin. My name's Marlon Justin.
Yeah, that's a solid team's name. I think you're gonna, you know, you won't score a lot, but you'll be a great grinder, and you know, any team would be happy to have you in their box.
Yes. For the record, Eric's name is Jeff Kraft. His name is Jeff Kraft.
Jeff Kraft, yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great.
Okay, we got to do Shang's real quick. His name is Bray Pearson. Bray, B-R-A-Y, Pearson. Bray Pearson.
Yeah. You know, he has a little bit of scoring upside, but not too much. He'd be a great, Kings first-round pick.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of guy who really plays Daryl Sutter hockey. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Let's see. The Norris. We need to talk about the Norris. Do you have a Norris
take? The only reason I don't want Doughty to win the Norris is because he was accused of violence against women. And I think it's a really bad look for the NHL to give the Hart to Kane, which they will definitely do, and the Doughty and the Norris to Doughty. I don't think anybody's going to really read it that way, and it won't come up. But to me personally, it's a rough look. As far as the rest goes, like, I don't care about giving Drew Doughty a Lifetime Achievement Award. I actually don't care about that. I think it's a good thing to identify multiple great players in an era, which Doughty is a great player in this era. He's an awesome hockey player. I don't have any problem identifying somebody that's been very good for a long time but hasn't been previously identified as an elite player. And I see a lot of people saying, man, we don't properly appreciate what Erik Karlsson has done for the Senators. But he's won two Norris Awards, which is pretty exceptional. That's exceptional identification as an elite player in the NHL to win multiple awards for being the best defenseman in the league. And one of the years he lost it recently was when he missed most of the season, and that's when PK Subban won it. So I don't hate that Drew Doughty. I do think Drew Doughty is going to win the Norris. I don't hate it from a hockey aspect. I hate it from a personal aspect, from the aspect of him possibly assaulting a woman. But otherwise, as from pure hockey standpoint, it's not a grave injustice to me. I have no problem. Like, that's why I don't have a problem with Kopitar, even in not his best Selke year, winning the Selke, because he's been excellent, and nobody is probably, as long as Patrice Bergeron plays in the NHL, is going to be a better defensive forward than Patrice Bergeron. There's a couple of guys this year that had surprisingly good years. I think Jordan Staal was really good in Carolina, and Travis Ajak was really good in New Jersey. And they could probably deserve some identification for what they do, but I have no problem with Kopitar getting the award at all.
Yeah, that seems pretty reasonable. I think I think he probably has the best statistical case this year, as long as you assume that his very low on ice save percentage, which is the reason there were a lot of goals against with him on the ice, is bad luck and not his fault, which I'm comfortable making that assumption. So I would probably say Karlsson has been the best defenseman this year. I also enjoy Brent Burns and his very unique style of play for a defenseman.
I wish Brent Burns was a King, just because he has so much personality.
Oh, yeah. And he also takes like 30% more shots than the next highest defenseman. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, he's a fun player.
He's a joy to watch out there.
He is.
Yeah.
I really go ahead.
I was just going to make, he's got this like traveling zoo around him as well, of animals and other Sharks players, and it's wonderful.
I love Brent Burns.
Yeah.
I will say before we go here, we've got a little less than 2 minutes left. I really need Jonathan Quick to win the Vezina this year.
We can agree. Quick for Vezina for sure. 100% behind that. Yeah.
In absolutely no world does Jonathan Quick deserve consideration for the Vezina this year based on the way his season ended. And I really need him to win it. I need it more than anything that I've ever needed as a Kings fan before, besides the Stanley Cup. I really need Jonathan Quick to win the Vezina. I didn't know how badly I wanted it until he got nominated, until he was a finalist for the award.
Well, it just came totally out of the moon there, but it's awesome. And
yeah,
I
even
love
when
to see him win it.
When I suggested it back a couple months ago, he was in the conversation, but not really. And now he's nominated when he played even worse down the stretch, so it's great. Anyway, we got to wrap up here.
All right. I was told to talk about Christian
You've
Hackenberg
got no time
by
at all.
Twitter. I
You've
think
no
Christian
time.
Hackenberg is a bust. All right. I said it.
All right. Glad to hear that. Christian Hackenberg, a blast. This has been Jewelcast.
A blast.
I'm Nick.
That's what the Jewelcast was, Nick. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.